Hey guys, the little special edition podcast that Pope and I recorded while we were at PlayStation Experience. We didn't have the ideal recording setup that we normally do, so you're going to hear some background noise from time to time. Sorry about that. All right, so today we are here with Derek Carroll and Jerry Hook.
Yep.
Hello.
Hello.
Morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You guys been enjoying PlayStation Experience so far?
Been having the full experience.
Yeah, the full experience.
Awesome.
So, this is Jerry Hook. I'm the project lead for the live team. So, all the live, the game that comes after the big box products.
So, like Halloween.
Halloween patches. Basically, what the live team does is work and coordinate with the studio on the core things we want to get out, as well as try to get new experiences into players' hands.
Gotcha.
Service after the sale.
That's right.
Right.
We heard about the live team, and we're excited to see the product of it.
Good.
So.
Sweet. I'm Derek Carroll. I'm a designer, title a senior designer, but I pretty much just do Crucible stuff.
Crucible stuff?
Things like Trials of Osiris and now Spirit Racing.
That was kind of odd to see you come here when I saw like the list of, oh, Derek Carroll's coming. I bet we're going to see some PvP stuff. And
yeah,
threw me for a little bit of a loop there.
It's PvP.
It is. It surprisingly is. We'll get a little bit more into that later. So I want to get a little bit more background info on you guys. Like, where were you guys before Bungie?
I've been in video games a long time. I was in advertising in Chicago originally, like out of high school, and did web stuff in the 90s and did CD-ROM VR, you know, QuickTime VR before that was made easy.
Mm-hmm.
It was really ridiculously hard back then. And then, so I went from doing webmaster stuff to being a webmaster for Fast Interactive, which was the web, you know, the arm of FASA Corp that did BattleTech and Shadowrun, Earthdawn, stuff like that. And so my first game was, I did like some expansion pack work for Mech Commander, and then Microsoft bought FASA Interactive and moved everybody out. And not me, because I was in the marketing department at the time, because I was doing the webmaster stuff and digital stuff. But then I got the opportunity to go out and be a contract designer, and it was kind of like, hey, you want to move across the country and cut your salary in half and, you know, be on a contract for 6 months and maybe something? I was like, yes, definitely. Absolutely, I want to make games.
Sounds like a good deal.
Yeah. Yeah, so I worked for Microsoft for 7 years or so, did Mech Commander 2, Mech Warrior 4, flew out and helped Day One do Mech Assault on the original Xbox.
You actually have a voice credit, I think, in... Was it Mech Assault?
I have weird credits all over. Because, again, like, doing advertising stuff and multimedia stuff, like, I did some of the screens in the background of the cinematics in Mech Commander, where it's like, we just need stuff on screens, little sine waves and stuff, you know, heart monitor kind of things. And, yeah, I'm a voice in Mech Commander 2. You know, I did a lot of what I called stunt art, where it's like I'm not an artist on the team per se, but it's like, oh, the mechs don't make footprints. Who's going to make the footprints? Like, who's going to fix them so they flip? And, you know, it's like, I'll make 100 footprints, whatever. You know, it's like, I can do that. I can do stuff like that. I can do batch processing.
You worked on Halo stuff too, right?
So Halo at the time, so Bungie was bought by Microsoft a year after FASA was, and it was kind of a learning experience for Microsoft, because when they bought FASA, they kind of broke it apart and kind of tried to reintegrate everybody into different teams at Microsoft. And so, like, you bought a company, but destroyed the culture and spread everybody out and brought in a bunch of flight sim people and, you know, this kind of stuff. And it was, you know, mixed results.
Yeah.
And so for Bungie, they wanted to keep Bungie together as a unit. And they were all surly and angry. So they wanted to keep that ball of anger together to, you know, because that's how they worked. I was asked to help on closing out Halo. And at the time, I just finished the Death March on MechWarrior 4. And so I kind of dodged that bullet. I was like, no, I want to enjoy Halo when it comes out.
Sure.
So I kind of missed the chance to say I worked on the first Halo, but I got to play it for years and not be angry about it every time I played it. So I think I made the right choice.
Cool. Jerry?
Yeah, I'm much older than all of you, so my history goes way back. So basically my career started in startups. I did low-level technologies everywhere from language competing with Access database work before Access was there as a product, and then some publishing software and low-level tech there. Startup was purchased by Microsoft And then from there, I joined Xbox as a brand new product team in Xbox Live, actually. And so it was part of the original Xbox Live team, developing Xbox Live for the original Xbox. And then pretty much from that point on, I did everything from create a marketplace for Xbox, helped create a lot of the shell and ran the shell team for a bit, ran the live service for a long time. So for about 12 years, I did the gambit of the community and games and social features on Xbox to...
A little bit of Google Glass, wasn't it?
No, not Google Glass. HoloLens.
HoloLens.
No, that was after my time.
Okay.
However, I was running the release management and community games for when we did the next Xbox Experience and Kinect.
Right.
And then after all that fiasco, I decided to... Jet and joined 343 for Halo to help run their mobile and their services side for Halo 4. I've got Halo 4 out the door, worked on some of the mobile side for Spartan Assault, and then moved on to do Halo 5, get all the Halo 5 infrastructure in my team. After the Halo 5 beta, I joined Bungie to go run the create and run this thing we call a live team.
Cool. Awesome. So we know where you guys were. We know where you're at now.
I forgot to mention Shadowrun. I want to talk about Shadowrun for the next hour.
Yeah, sadly, you're like one of the only people in the room that's actually played.
Whoa.
Oh, never mind.
Not correct.
Oh, this interview is over.
My son and I played.
Okay.
It's over.
An amazing amount of Shadowrun.
Okay.
We had to look it up.
I go in like, I know that game.
It was familiar.
The most unique,
yeah.
Amazing
Derek's
so fun.
So I have to go back and play.
That's
it.
Fine. You should definitely go back.
Find it on Steam?
It'll definitely run on your PC. The PC version.
Yeah.
It was a Games for Windows Live under Vista.
Oh, no.
And that was kind of one of the things it did was, you know, the cross PC and Xbox 360. But the 360 version, you should probably be able to find and play
on 360.
But a lot of those ideas have made their way into Destiny. So if you're playing Destiny, you probably have.
Which actually kind of leads us to my next question. So how has you guys' past work kind of influenced what you guys are doing on Jerry, your past work? You know, how's that influencing the live team?
Building service organizations for the past 15 plus years, how to run a service, how to keep players fed, how to keep new features, how to build products and run teams, various sizes. And that's really the biggest thing that I help bring to Bungie. Changing the mentality of how do you actually release product quickly? How do you change existing processes and models to basically break apart and help the team focus on just shipping? And realize that the customer is a big part of what a service brings, and listening to the customer, getting that feedback, and how fast you can get that feedback into your product is pretty much what I've been doing for the past 15 years.
So while we were all running around the patrol spaces on our Sparrows at the beginning of Destiny and saying, wow, wouldn't it be amazing to race these things? You guys were listening to that?
Yeah, actually, a lot of the team was as well. As I'm sure Derek can tell you, it was interesting coming in. And actually, I came in right at House of Wolves. And so seeing what Emmy Chung, who's our amazing creative director, put into helping make the Wolf Patrol and learning from that and understanding what people like and what they don't like. And it's an amazing team. Bungie's an amazing team, very strong on innovation, not afraid of pushing the boundaries a bit. And that's something that is actually very hard to train people to try to do is take risks. And services help with that, because you can take a risk and move forward and quickly change it and correct. And it's been great to see what came before to help make sure that, like, patrols and whatnot. Yeah. Definitely a core DNA. Matt Priestley, who's my executive producer, same thing. Very core DNA on listening to the community, seeing what's working, what's hot out there for the players, and figuring out how do we incorporate, how do we move it into the game.
Cool.
Yeah. So I've done multiplayer game design my entire game career. Yeah. So, starting with multiplayer maps for Mech Commander and stuff like that. PvP is definitely my interest, and that's what I do and what I've always done. calling it PvP was alien to me, because it's like, that there's no other, like, what are you talking about? So when MMOs kind of came out, it was like, oh, wait a minute, no, there's these two types of players, and it's like, really? Okay, sure.
So your background, as far as your experience with Mech Commander and bringing it into the PvP maps, do you feel like that the Guardians or their super abilities kind of mirror that movement on the map? And because we've got all these things like Titan skating, and you've got all these ways of hunters, you know, blinking. And does that change the way that PvP maps were looked at for you?
Yeah. So again, like, Shadowrun had similar abilities to Destiny. In fact, like, in Shadowrun, you could teleport through walls, where hunters can't do that in Destiny. That's probably not going to happen. Designing the maps for Shadowrun, the difference between Halo and Shadowrun was like, oh, okay, everything has to be infinitely tall, or at least you have to consider that people can fly, so they're going to get on top of stuff. And so when you play a game where it's like, oh no, in a game where you're a tank or something, it's like, tanks don't get on top of houses. They're just going to be driving around on the terrain and knocking stuff down.
I was the type of player that would try to get the tank on top
of
the house.
Of course you try. And it's like, no, that doesn't work. But when you start giving the players more abilities, you have to kind of take a step back and kind of rethink how you're building the spaces. And so kind of teaching the artists, to kind of unlearn some of the behaviors that, you know, it's like, well, if you've always made it this way, you know, where you have a nice little skyline where it's like, oh, that looks great. It's a good landmark, but I'm going to get on top of it, and now I can see the whole map and snipe everybody. You know, your first instinct is like, well, let's not let them up there. And it's like, well, yeah, you know, you could, there are cases where you just don't want to let players up on something that looks like they should. But in most cases, it's more interesting to say, you know, if you catch it early enough, it's like, well, what does this do? You know, we're giving the players this power. So if we let them up here, how do we work around that? How do we make sure that's still fair and interesting, and, you know, make sure there's a light up there so that players can be seen and things like that? It's more work for everybody, but we're giving the players this power. So we want to, you know, we want them to use it and want them to feel powerful doing it.
Do you ever like design the maps to maybe like teach? One of the biggest things in like playing Titanfall for me as a player that had played like Tribes, it's like, I'm used to, you know, bouncing around everywhere and everything, but then there's a lot of players that came from Call of Duty that they stick their boots on the ground and they never really jump.
Right.
Is kind of helping the player along, teach them that kind of thing, taken into the map design at all?
I mean, there's always those kind of environmental cues where if there's a intentional ledge or an intentional like broken out window that isn't something you'd normally be able to get to as a, you know, normal human, but it's like, oh, I can boost or, you know, glide or something. So we'll always put like a little ramp up there. So it's like, oh, I'm walking up this ramp, and it guides your eye naturally to the oh, there's a ledge up there. Sweet. There's obviously the natural route with stairs and ramps and things. But if there's a jump path, we generally make most of them pretty easy to get to. And then there's kind of that other class of like, yeah, maybe a hunter can't get there, you know, or maybe it's usually they're all passable. They're all doable, but there's going to be some that are like, that's a skill jump, or this is a ninja route that, you could fall to your death.
Like,
you
know, like in short time, that one little jump that you can go to the heavy ammo.
Okay. Yeah. It's like, and that's a natural, like, yes, that's a risky way to go. But, you know,
you can flank your team, you can flank the enemy team, and they're not looking at you.
Yeah.
So there's a risk reward there.
Yep.
Yeah.
Moving on into what we saw announced at PlayStation Experience, Sparrow Racing.
When I thought of Sparrow Racing, I thought of like an in-game, like daily, like so an event that happens and you have these checkpoints in the thing. So what made you think of the direction you were going to go with it and deciding on dedicated maps and things like that?
One of the interesting things is, so Sparrow Racing comes from the community as well as the team. So when the pre-alpha and the alpha were out, as soon as you get on the Sparrow, you're like, yeah, I'm going to drive this around. As soon as you have two Sparrows, you're going to race them. Yeah. Like, that's just what people do. You give them a vehicle, they're going to race it. They want to see how it performs and see how they perform with it. What happened was, about a year ago, we had a hackathon. It must have been after the last pentathlon. So we had a hackathon where different internal teams got together and worked all weekend and kind of did what they were interested in, totally off the books, and just, you know, just let them do whatever. And sure. So artists and engineers, and yeah, just yeah. little stuff that wasn't approved, but it was like, I want to try this.
Yeah.
And that's actually where the colorblind settings in okay. our options menu came from.
Thank that you came, very much for that, by the way.
Yeah, so that came out of some one of our, I believe that was Brad Fish on the UI team, mm-hmm. is like, I can do this pretty easily. And, you know, they did it, and it was like, oh, okay. So the hackathon was a way for us to see projects and say, oh, okay, you know, what's it going to take to make this real and actually ship it? And so one of the teams did a sparrow racing prototype. And some of the artists have worked on racing games in the past, and so they have race tracks and the idea of, you know, racing on an actual track rather than just in a patrol space with like little checkpoints lined up. That's what they wanted to do, and they've built race courses for other, you know, Xbox games and things like that. And so that was their hackathon project, and people played it and were like, this is something we could do. And, you know, again, what's it going to take to actually ship this to the customer and, you know, and do it to a level that Bungie would be proud of? And then, you know, the sparrow racing that we showed yesterday is the result of that.
What racing games did you guys pull from, inspiration from?
I mean, me personally, I looked at, you know, you start with some of the great PlayStation racing games like Wipeout and Jet Moto from the PlayStation 1 days. You know, the last time I really got into those kind of games, so those free, you mm-hmm. know,
it has a Wipeout feel.
Yeah, it's, but yeah, I guess when we started, we also had the thing like, hey, we're not going to make a full racing game. Like, we're not going to be yeah. able to make Mario Kart with this, yeah. this really small team. We're not going to be able to make this really round and complete game. And then we're like, you know, we can make a pretty good game, you know, just with what we have with these tools and like basically looking, taking the prototype and starting with like, what would it take to make the Sparrow really good in racing? And, you know, just making that list and going and figuring out like what we could do. And it's like, oh, we need to borrow a sandbox designer. And we got Bill Gross to, you know, fix the Sparrow internally. You probably, most players won't notice what he did, but he spent a lot of time kind of rejiggering the internals of you know, the technical side of it so that it would still work in patrols and everywhere else mm-hmm. in the game, but then be able to go really fast for racing. And that was actually another one of the things that was kind of thrown around early on, where it's like, oh, do we have racing sparrows that you can only use in sparrow racing? Mm-hmm. And so there'll be a totally different vehicle. That would be an easy thing for us to do.
Sure.
It would be safe. And it's like, okay, they're not going to mess up Vault of Glass or, you know, anything like that. You know, it's a more Destiny thing to be able to bring your gear anywhere.
Sparrow anywhere, right?
Yeah.
So in that sense, are you going to want to take a sparrow racing sparrow into Sparrow Racing League, or is your favorite sparrow from, you know, Vault of Glass or,
You can definitely bring Timebreaker into, and, some of those other ones into sparrow racing and be competitive.
Okay.
I think Timebreaker is probably still the fastest in a straight line yep. of all the sparrows, although it does, you know, tend to blow up
yeah.
if you ride it too hard. So there's that.
It's a risk reward.
Again, kind of with Destiny, it's like you should be able to use what you like, what you're comfortable with, sure. what you want to show off. It's like, if I had a Timebreaker, I'd definitely ride it. I would want to, you know, show
it. It took me a year to get my Grave Robber, so
yeah,
I'm going to use that.
Yeah.
The other thing is that when you first start the quest line for Sparrow Racing, the quest line gives you a Sparrow yeah. at the end of it. And right. so everybody just doing the quest line will be able to get a new Sparrow as well.
Absolutely. So everybody's going to get an opportunity to get a Sparrow that will be competitive within the game.
Yep. And then if you're a PlayStation user, you'll also be able to, once you earn your C license, which is the first license you get for the very start of Amanda's quest line, we'll kick off a Sony-specific Sparrow quest line
okay.
that will end with the Sony special blue neon Sparrow that was showed at the show.
Okay.
Speaking of Amanda Holiday, the tower, are we seeing a redesign of the tower for this event?
Yeah, absolutely. You will come in and it will feel like there is a Formula Grand Prix going on in the tower. For those of you who were astute in looking at the help pages, you will see what Tess Everest's booth looks like with the Sparrow Racing mm-hmm. flags and everything mm-hmm. else. So yeah, you'll see a very similar treatment. It's something that we think helps bring the entire event to the game world, whether you want to participate in Sparrow Racing or not.
And I noticed when we were in the tower, there was seemed to be more like around inside the garage area where the ships come in. There was people working on their sparrows. It felt like you were coming into a garage where like there's things going on. There was the pit crews working on sparrows in the area around Amanda Holiday. So a lot of these little details that really felt like you were in an event.
Yeah, Ryan Parody, who's my lead event designer, he made the whole place feel like an amazing race pit. Like it was, it felt the way that I'm into MotoGP, GP, and other racing, and felt very similar to when you see the back, you see the crews working on everything, and it feels very similar.
The color scheme of the flags and what they're using for it, it really felt like the palette came from the color scheme, and everything reminds me of like a European or Italian race, like an event that you see those kind of green.
Yeah, I think that was Mick, colors. Right?
Mick and Joe Cross.
Yeah,
Joe Cross is in the Vidoc for the mm-hmm. live team,
and Mick was there too.
And Mick also. Yeah. They were actually a really big part of pushing Sparrow Racing, and so like coming at it from that graphic design and. kind of that feel of racing, they're pretty instrumental in
that. They're amazing. What our artists are able to do just blows my brain.
Yep.
And it's so funny because they'll go, so I just whipped this up, and you're looking at it going, this is like a work of art. Like,
we should ship that. Insane. Like, we should sell that. We should exactly. sell that right away. So they're like, no, we're not going to. No, this is terrible.
See, as a community members, I personally love when I'm at work or on my phone. Are we going to be able to see some of that concept art or art posted up on the website?
That's a good question.
That'd be great if we could get those. Like, I love to have that as screenshots and stuff like that.
Get a year two art book starting to roll.
Sure.
Yeah, let's get that going for us. Absolutely. It's just some of the Bungie art when you guys are coming up with your concepts and putting it together. It really is art.
Yes, it's amazing. Beautiful. Even though the artists did not agree with us.
yeah, some of them.
Yeah. If you ever want to mess with a painter, just walk up behind him while they're painting and go, is that finished?
Exactly.
It's never finished. Derek, so you mainly worked on PvP stuff. This is a pretty big departure for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things we did early on with Destiny is when we're trying to figure out how we talk about the Crucible before we had a name for it. It's just, we're the PvP team. And so you'll see under every PvP activity, it just says competitive multiplayer. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of early on. That was kind of our thing was that it's just competitive multiplayer. It's like, that's what you do. You come to the Crucible when you want to compete against other real players.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't really matter like the details of that. It's like, so racing is extremely competitive. And so, Sparrow Racing is it's mostly about fun. It's a fun event. And if you just go in as a singleton, just randomly match made, you'll have a good time. You'll get sweet loot. You'll learn the courses and stuff. But if you go in with six people, you can go in with a full fire team. And everybody's on voice chat. Everybody's, it's like as intense as anything else. It's like, I'm going to win. Like last night we were playing. It's like, oh, I'm going to win this race.
Yeah.
It's happening. And so,
And that's the first time from a PvP or group environment. This is the first time we're seeing a six player individual event being available to us, right?
Yes.
So you can take your full raid team in.
Yep.
And each person into Sparrow Racing, mm-hmm. and then they each get to race on their own competitively against each other, right? But then if you went in with four, the game would automatically matchmake you with two more.
Yes. Yeah. All the races are six players. Right. So if you just go in, we'll get five other players. So
two players, the game will match you up with four more.
Yep.
Right.
That's definitely one of the funner things that I saw. As we all join in, we just realized, wait, we can talk shit to each other.
Oh, yes.
while we're doing this. And then, of course, as you joined in on the very last race and I was in the lead.
Yeah.
Until literally the last second, and then you overtook me by like 2/1000ths of a second.
Yeah,
it
was pretty close.
So they're the idea behind the maps being their own instead of in patrol is that you guys could design obstacles within the map to make it challenging. So can you describe some of the decisions or I noticed in one of the maps you have gigantic blades that are
big fans.
Big fans that are spinning around, and one of them destroyed me.
Yep.
Like I was in the lead, destroyed me.
Yep.
What was the decision making behind like obstacles, and you have enemies on the board
and
the
enemies shooting? They it's different enemies every time. Like
yeah, it can be.
It'll be like Fallen one time. Next time it'll be Taken and Vex.
Yeah, so like on Mars, it's Cabal and Vex or Taken.
Yeah.
So depending on, it's just like a in any destination, yeah. Sometimes the Taken are there. So you get, you kind of don't know quite what to expect. I mean, there's going to be bad guys shooting at you.
Sure.
But yeah, the obstacles are just a way to make it more Destiny, more interesting, funnier.
It would feel kind of empty if you weren't driving through the Mars landscape and, you know, a bunch of Vex are just sitting there lobbing void crap at you.
Yeah, and that came out of iteration, and like the original plan didn't call for enemies on the board, and it was kind of like, oh, you know, we've never done that before, like having a PvP mode with AI,
with the first
enemy combatants firing at you, and it's like, you know, and we, you know, when you do that, you're introducing all randomness, and it's like people are going to complain that, you know, they got robbed and this and that. It's like, yes, but this is more fun this way.
On the Venus map, and on one of the longer straightaways, there's always these two Hydras, and if you're up ever so slightly too high, you end up just bumping into them.
You want to go underneath them, around them.
To hit that checkpoint to get the speed boost.
So you really want to be hitting those checkpoints to win the race.
Yes. Yeah. The boost gates increase your top speed, your maximum top speed. Up to five, there's like five levels of boost. So if you miss five in a row, you're going really slow, which is, it feels really slow, but that's actually your normal Sparrow speed.
Okay.
So you can go, it's not five times, but it's five levels above that, and you can be going pretty fast. And one thing people noticed after you get used to it, it's like, oh, I don't have to hit every gate.
Yeah.
It's more about getting a line that you like, hitting the corners the right way or the way you want to hit them, and making sure that your opponents are not hitting.
There's a big risk versus reward thing there, because in that very last race where you overtook me, I was like, no, I can miss this gate and then hit the last two, and I should still be like going max speed at that point.
Right.
But missing that one like bumped me down to, I think, like stage three or something, and you overtook me.
And there's physics within the players.
Yeah, you can bump into people. Yeah. So
rubbing is racing here. You're bumping them off.
And most certainly.
Yeah.
Yeah, at the last second, just making sure that you're barely in the gate and they're not. Is a good way.
Huge.
And then, you know, there's rocks on the side of the course. And so everyone's taking the same turn. It's like, well, you're going to take the turn a little too tight. And then there's that one column.
I also noticed that the boost, the thrust left and right, you have a fixed number of those, right?
Yeah, I think it's three. But you have boost fuel is like this limited economy commodity that you get. And every time you go through a gate, you get a little bit back. And when you go through the start-finish line, you get it all back.
Okay.
You also get it back for doing tricks. Mm-hmm. So if you have a trick Sparrow or you do 360s or tricks, when you land it successfully, you'll hear a sound and you'll get the energy back. Mm-hmm. So that's, managing that resource is an important part of it too.
Yeah, and I noticed that when you're going at the top speed, you need to correct your movement, and otherwise you're going to hit a wall. If you don't have those the lateral boosts, you're going to smack right into it. And then scrub speed, or you can slow down if you don't have it, but then you're scrubbing speed and you're having to accelerate again.
Yep.
So it really becomes like you have to strategize how you're using those boosts. When I was coming off the jumps, I found myself doing the Superman, you know, just to make sure that I had hit the ground, and have all three of my thrusts available. Right.
Yeah. And the other thing is you'll learn to lead your corners, to make those tighter turns as well.
Sure.
So, like in most racing games, you want to make sure that you're leading ahead of your Sparrow, to make those tight turns. And it's okay to lose some speed, like what you were saying, because that's the Some boosts, if you're taking them at the wrong angle, will
throw you right into a wall. Yeah. Yeah, right. And you'll roll over, and then you'll explode, yeah. And then now you're...
So you can destroy your sparrow.
You can get shot. Mm-hmm. The other thing about the leaders that Derek forgot to mention is if you're in the lead, you're getting the taken, and enemies are shooting you as a priority target.
Yeah, I heard that as like a voiceover. I was like, so I know we're in the lead, but that does mean things will be shooting at us more.
Yes, that's true.
Thank you, Nolan.
Thank you, Nolan.
I also noticed something else that is I think like a balancing. I thought it was helpful because I was in the lead and the fan destroyed me, and then I found myself in sixth place. And I noticed it when I started going again, those boost gates got considerably larger.
Yep.
And they, I mean, almost tripled in size.
Yeah.
And as I got further back into the lead, the boost gates got smaller. So is that an element that you guys put in to help those, you know, for that exact reason?
Yeah. It's racing is definitely most exciting when there's a pack.
Yeah.
And we don't ever want people to feel like they can't ever catch up and the race is over and they should just return to orbit. Like that's a bad case. So when you're in sixth place, the gates are much easier to hit. You actually get a bigger boost when you go through them, like initially. And so you can catch up pretty quickly, if you're in last place. And yeah, the boost gates, if you're in first place, are only a few meters wide.
Yeah.
And they expand as you get farther back in the pack.
Yeah, there's the example on the showroom floor today. We saw people who would sit down at their station, start the race, and realize their controls were inverted. And they would.
Who plays with horizontal inversion?
Oh my God. Why? So weird. So they'd go through, they'd go to settings, they'd correct it. But several people still came back after, 5 to 6 seconds they were behind and were able to win the race.
So. What can players look forward to as far as like rewards from this? You mentioned earlier we can see like a sparrow. We know like there's some exclusive racing gear associated with this as well. So what can players really look forward to?
Yeah, so the main rewards that you're going to see is your big rewards, those that carry power, are your head and your class items. Those will carry you into light like any other Crucible match. Mm-hmm. And so you will see those drop at your correct light level. And the more you rank up your reputation with Amanda, the more light level you can go, all the way up to 320 if you're top reputation with Amanda. And the rest of the pieces, bear no light. So your chest, your legs, your boots, they still have perks to help you with, sparrow racing. That's what they're for. And those again will drop as you race.
Can you give us an example of like what a perk would be that would help us from a piece of armor?
It's like gain energy, increase boost from the gates.
So you're gonna want to deck your guy out with racing gear.
Yeah, if you love sparrow racing, you will want the gear that decks you as a sparrow racer.
And everybody's that gear is available. Anybody who's playing.
Yep, anyone who plays will
be able to earn it. It's reward like both through the end of the match, and then you can end up buying it from Amanda. I think.
Yeah, well. Amanda has we added this cool thing. So if you really love sparrow racing, or you just know, hey, look, I'm just gonna want the best looking gear from a vanity perspective, sure, because I just really love the look of sparrow racing, then go pick up the record book that Tess sells. And what that does is provide a whole bunch of extra challenges for you that you can turn in and earn very targeted rewards. They have very specific rewards for all the various pieces. Again, they're all just vanity pieces. They're not like giving you increased bonuses or anything. The other great thing that we did that Emmy and Victoria, who's our designer for these types of items, they have this amazing thing where you can play the race. Let's say you're like, you know what? I have no idea if I'm going to like sparrow racing or not. I just want to test it out. And you start playing, you realize, oh my gosh, I've sunk 10 hours into this thing. I'm really loving it. It's a blast. Our friends are playing. We're getting in six-person groups. But you didn't buy the book. You can go back to Tess and realize, nope, I really, like, I want to show off my stuff. I want to make sure that I look like a pimpin' sparrow racer champion. So you can go buy the book. we track all your stats. So when you get the book and you've already completed a lot of the challenges, you can just turn in those rewards.
It's like retroactive.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Again, Emmy is just an amazing creative director, and her whole team. So thoughtful on what the players really want. We always want to reward your engagement. We always want your time to never feel like it's been wasted. So when you get that book and you know that the time you've spent is already taken into account, I think that's a huge win for players and something that, again, I really appreciate about my design team.
Are you able to announce any exotic racing gear?
No.
No.
By the way, I think it all looks exotic compared to the existing armor. Like, it is a complete different take on our armor and gear that we currently have in the game. So I think it is so unique for the players.
I looked at Poe and I'm like, Power Ranger DLC? What's going on?
Oh, it's very similar.
That is hilarious.
It's very Power Ranger-esque, but yes. it looks a lot to me like someone that's sitting on a crotch rocket.
Yep,
like,
absolutely. Yes. Absolutely.
Has that look.
Rossi.
Motorcycle of leathers. It has a great feel to it.
Yeah. I want that full set of spandex and then pink, the shader that was bright pink.
Yes.
Loudest pink color, the pink sparrow that you could get.
That's a cool thing that what the artist and what Victoria did, like you can create the, you know, fully sparrow matching as well as your suit matching, mm-hmm. as well as all the elemental sparrows on top of that. Mm-hmm. And so you
elemental
literally
sparrows,
can completely,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I saw void. I saw,
you got
arc,
solar, arc.
Solar.
Yep. Yeah. And they all have unique effects when you're boosting and, mm-hmm. and when you're flying down the track. So it's just sweet.
And I've also noticed that, when you are racing, cause you're sitting just like in a normal sparrow, you're kind of sitting third person. The particle effects coming from the actual class items are really cool. It's like streaking,
almost
like a Tron look where you're getting a tail, a streak
of light
behind you.
Yeah. The coolest thing is when you take that jump in Mars, it's like one of the highest jumps that we have.
Yeah.
And everyone, if you go with your pack and everybody's up in the air and they have that gear and you see all these light streaks streaming
like
for you,
it's
so cool. That's right.
Yeah.
Double rainbow.
Yeah. Double rainbow.
I cried a little.
What does it mean?
You can also, there are some class items in the regular game that have particle effects. Like, so can you wear any of your class items from the regular game
absolutely.
In the game? Right?
Yeah. So FYI, this is how I play. So I love Ghost Rider. If you've ever been on a most, you get the blue ghost helmet because power doesn't really matter that much in Sparrow Racing, right? So you get the blue, so you have a flaming skull head,
okay.
right? You get the black shader, right? Yeah. You get the black sparrow.
Right.
Or the flame sparrow with
you
were freaking Ghost Rider in Destiny. So just saying.
I'm doing that.
You're doing that, right?
So. Absolutely.
I go hot pink.
Pink is also
I'm gonna
amazing.
Either hot pink or I need to find like a Knight Rider type.
I'm gonna put on my Kryptarch helmet.
Yes,
my Kryptarch mask, the paper mache mask, and go.
Yeah,
I'm gonna
go
Sparrow Racing.
Yeah, Oryx mask gives you extra aerodynamic.
Oh yeah. A little more downforce so you can go faster.
Or
head spoiler.
Or the helmet from the Titan helmet from Prison of Elders.
Oh yeah.
So one last question about Sparrow Racing before we kind of end this. Why are we seeing this as kind of a limited time event? You think live team, it's like, I want to be able to come off work any day and maybe go play this.
Yeah, so let me go back to what Derek was saying about how this was all created. So the team did a prototype, showed that we could actually do what we wanted to do. For what the live team does is sit down and take a look at all the various asks that the community have, take a look at what we want to do as a team as well. Where those match is usually what we look at first. And we say, we need to go, this is something we need to go on. And so very early on when I joined, this was already, Emmy and her team were thinking this is a great idea. Luke Timmons, who's the head of the PvP organization, he was also wanting to take a look at this. So we sat down, we look at what works, what doesn't work, what we can pull together. And then what we want to try to do, like I said, for most live games is how do we get something out there that helps the community get a brand new, fresh experience, right? So from our goals for us of bringing something new that the teams have not really seen before, the teams, the players have not seen before. Something very important to us. And so limited time, what that allows us to do is it allows us to get a solid experience, something that, ships at quality the way we want it to do, but it does it in a basically bite-sized form. Allows us to start training the team and the community to say, how do you provide feedback into us and how fast can we turn things around? And so our hope, I mean, from the response we're getting from the showroom floor is people are loving the game. I have a feeling the community is going to come back and say, we want more, like give us more of this. Fantastic. We will turn this in. We'll look at different ways in which we can bring that back for players. But the limited time allows both the players and us to say, hey, what really is going to work for us, right? I heard everything on the floor from, no, you don't understand. I want two people on the sparrow, one shooting a gun, and one, and I'm like a warthog. I want people shooting on the sparrow. No. Just give me a way to like, kill a Vex and it like shoots a blue shell at the guy at the front, right? And so you have the community is going to figure out like really what do we want to have, right? Yeah, and then we'll take that feedback in and we'll say, okay, what is this going to look like next? And Derek and his team will do amazing things to blow it out of the water.
Yeah. I mean, nothing further, Your Honor. And because it takes so much time and energy to make these things, like, yeah, it's like we're not going to build a full racing game that you could, sure, you know, buy on the store shelves in a limited amount of time unless the community really reacts to it and you're like, oh, we really do want all this stuff. It's like, oh, we can go back and keep making that.
So if people eat this up and it becomes a community sensation and you get a lot of there's going to be a place on Bungie for us to go give you guys feedback in the forums. I'm sure Deech has already set that up, but,
you hear that, Deech?
Yeah. So we're gonna jump in there and we're gonna give you guys feedback. And if there's a great community response to it, it will come back in an improved form and, you know, with some changes maybe, and we'll be able to play it again.
Yeah. I mean, I obviously can't make promises.
But that's the
idea behind it.
I do want to say, I want to see a European Dead Zone Santa Monica map. Like, I want to race on a
specifically
a very next circuit European dead zone. Yeah, we want to get some old F1 tracks that get taken off.
Oh, that's a good idea.
That'd be pretty fun. So, one final question to you guys: What's like one of your favorite games each? Like, just video games in general, not Destiny.
Or maybe what are you playing?
What are you playing right now, if anything else?
So the best game of all time is Red Planet Martian Football. there's no question. What I'm playing right now is Destiny, which is weird because, like, Destiny to me is amazing because we can keep making it. We keep fixing it. We keep changing it and adding new things. Every game I've shipped up until this point, you know, you play it for like 2 years while you're making it, and then you ship it, and you play it a little bit, and you have a good time, and then you're on to the next thing, and you've had it, you're pretty much done. And then with Destiny, it's like, yeah, I'm still doing patrols. Like, I'm still having, and not because it's my job, it's like, it's fun to do. I'm doing the bounties, and I'll do Trials of Osiris on the weekend, and Iron Banner comes up, and yeah, I'm going to rank 5 of an Iron Banner. Years after, you know, it's like, there's something there. It's really the social aspect,
meeting up with your friends.
Meeting up with your friends, but just seeing random people out in the spaces. And, you know, one weekend, my trials team wasn't there. So I just went on Twitter and I was like, hey, I need to, let's do some trials. And, you know, people were right there and it's like, all right, sweet. And, you know, the Destiny community is amazing. It's great.
Yeah. And I'm pretty much in the same boat. So, I've got a family. Pretty much whatever my family wants to play takes priority. Right now, my son and I are heavy into Heroes of the Storm. And so we play that. In fact, I was on Hearthstone last night and you know, because BattleNet's all connected, and Duncan pings me from his game, how's the show going, that sort of thing. And so for me, it's all about that connectivity with my family. My wife and I still play WoW.
You should have said that earlier, Patrick. Would have been much, much nicer to you.
So, and then, yeah, still Destiny. So I have friends who play on PlayStation and Xbox, and got dual 40s on both. 300 light on both. So I play a ton of Destiny.
About it. Yeah, why are you throwing these numbers at us? Yeah.
Well, because otherwise everyone on the other side of this is going to go, yeah, whatever. He's got, what, 40s, no light level, and he hasn't done anything. But yeah, the biggest thing I've actually found recently with a lot of Destiny, helping get, we had a recent TV accident in my home, so my son can't play with me anymore, but taking my son and his friends and going through Destiny as well. Playing with new players is probably one of the most enjoyable things I have done.
I absolutely agree.
Yeah, and I took, recently been taking some friends from, my MMOs that I play, and I play a ton, and brought them into Destiny. They're non-FPS shooters. They're they just know MMO mechanics. And so the MMO side of Destiny, they completely understood, weren't confused by, and then teaching them how to first-person shoot and get better at it. And my assumption was they would hate it. But no, they've actually been really enjoying it. And just like Derek was saying, like, we've had more fun with patrols and the big world events because it brings more players in. It brings that randomness into the game that players from MMOs really enjoy. So,
and me sitting down with my son for the refer friend, I bought another Xbox or another PlayStation and put the monitors right next to each other. So my son and I sit down and we just two-manned Crota for the first time.
Oh, wow.
He's in second grade. So we're sitting there and we're playing Crota together, and because we don't have split screen, which is a bummer.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But I set it up so that we're sitting elbow to elbow, and I'm right there with you. It's probably one of the best experiences that I've been having in video gaming, is playing with my son.
Who held the sword when you guys did that? Did you like, I'm going to be the one?
He did everything.
He did everything?
Like, all right. He was the key. My job was to keep him alive, and his job was to do all the fun stuff. And it's been a blast.
Awesome.
Going through the lantern phase with two titans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. All right. Well, Jerry, Derek, thank you so much for doing whatever this is. This podcast, I guess.
Awesome.
Yeah, we really appreciate it.
And are we recording this?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no.
And so I know
where are you keeping the mic?
Oh, yeah. No.
I know you guys got to get back to the... You got one more day of this, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. So thank you very much, and really appreciate you spending some time with us this morning. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.